Picture this. You are walking through your house in the middle of the night,
Okay.
and it is pitch black. But you don't even bother reaching for a light switch, right? Because you don't need it.
Right. You know exactly how many steps it takes to get to the kitchen.
Exactly. You just reach out, and your hand naturally finds the faucet. Your muscles just know where everything is.
You've built up that spatial map.
Yeah. But imagine if, while you were sleeping, someone snuck in and moved the kitchen sink just 2 inches to the left.
Oh, you would be totally lost.
Completely. You bump your hip on the counter, fumble around in the dark, probably spill something. That spatial map in your brain would suddenly be, well, completely useless.
Which is incredibly frustrating.
Right. Now, imagine if someone moved the send button on your favorite texting app just 2 inches.
You'd misfire every single time.
Every time. And that invisible, deeply ingrained map in your brain is what software developers call digital muscle memory.
It's a huge concept.
It really is. And, well, welcome to your deep dive. You sent us a fascinating stack of developer logs today. And looking through your notes, we found an incredible story about basically weaponizing that muscle memory.
Yeah, we are looking at version 0.0.4 of an AI agent project called Mio.
And our mission today is to figure out how this developer completely rebuilt a bare bones chat app into a native feeling platform. And they did it by hacking the reflexes of roughly 1.3 billion people.
It really is a masterclass in user experience engineering. I mean, we're looking at a developer who realized that making something look pretty is entirely secondary to deeply understanding the psychological digital habitat of your user base.
Yeah. But to set the baseline for you, we have to look at where Mio was in version 0.0.3.
Right, the previous version.
According to the logs you provided, it was a solid, production-ready Telegram bot. Like, it worked flawlessly.
But, and the developer noted this, it was functional in the way a raw computer terminal is functional.
Yes, you type a command, you hit enter, you get an output.
Right, it completely lacked a sense of place.
And more importantly, for Mio's specific target audience, which is Chinese users, it lacked any sense of familiarity.
Because Telegram is a highly capable platform, sure, but it is fundamentally an imported experience for that specific demographic.
Yeah, it's not where they live.
Exactly. It's not where the Chinese user base naturally conducts business or spends their digital lives. So building an app for that audience on a platform like Telegram is essentially forcing them into an entirely unfamiliar environment before they even start interacting with your actual product.
You're asking them to learn a new house in the dark.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this. The developer realized that to make Chinese users truly comfortable, the interface had to perfectly mirror an environment they already knew intimately.
And in China, that environment is unquestionable.
It's WeChat.
What's fascinating here is the sheer scale of that digital muscle memory. The developer's logs state that basically every Chinese smartphone user has the WeChat interface burned into their fingers.
Burned in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it has moved beyond being just a user interface pattern. It is an involuntary reflex at this point.
Right.
So by migrating Mio away from a Telegram bot and transforming it into a dedicated web application, the developer wasn't just applying a new visual theme.
No, they were reconstructing the entire foundational experience around a mental model that over a billion people already possess.
And trust implicitly.
And looking at the architecture notes, they committed to this mental model with zero compromises. Like, they built a multi-page architecture with four very specific tabs anchored at the bottom of the screen.
Mirroring the WeChat layout to the pixel.
To the pixel. First, you have the chats tab. This is where active conversations are sorted dynamically by the last message received.
Complete with the search bar and relative timestamps, yeah.
Then, sitting right next to it, the contacts tab. This is where all your available AI agents are grouped by preset types.
And it features a really prominent ad agent button at the top.
Right.
Notice the structural framing happening there, by the way.
What do you mean?
Well, by placing AI agents into a contacts tab, the interface immediately signals to the user, hey, these AI entities belong in the same mental category as your real human
Oh,
friends.
wow. Family, colleagues.
Exactly. It normalizes the AI.
That is so smart. Then you have the third tab, Discover, which operates as a preset marketplace.
Right, where you can browse different AI personalities, read quick summaries, and just add them to your contacts with a single tap.
And finally, the Me tab, which houses your personal profile card, system settings, and the logout function.
Now, The developer emphasizes a highly technical distinction here that we shouldn't gloss over.
Right, but the single-page app thing.
Yeah, this isn't just a cheap single-page app pretending to have tabs by swapping out visual components.
Like just changing the picture on the screen.
Exactly. Each of these tabs is a real, distinct page with its own dedicated routing structure.
Why does that matter so much?
That routing distinction is vital for maintaining the illusion of a native application. When a developer just builds a single-page app and uses visual tricks to switch between views, the browser's history breaks.
Oh, right, if I hit the back button.
Exactly. If a user hits the back button on their phone, they expect to go to the previous tab. But in a poorly built single-page app, hitting back might accidentally close the entire application.
Or throw them all the way back to Google.
Right. By engineering true, dedicated routes for each tab, the developer ensures the browser's back button behaves exactly how the user's reflexes expect it to.
I see the technical rigor there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have to play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure.
Isn't blatantly copying WeChat a bit, you know, lazy from a design perspective?
Lazy.
Yeah. It feels like walking into a friend's kitchen and they've intentionally put their spoons in the exact same drawer where you keep your spoons at home.
Right.
It's highly convenient, sure.
Yeah.
But where's the innovation? Like, why wouldn't a developer try to invent a completely new, revolutionary way to interact with an AI agent?
That assumption is incredibly common in the tech industry, where novelty is often mistaken for innovation.
Okay.
But if we analyze the core philosophy of user interface design, true innovation is about systematically removing friction so the user can focus entirely on the product's actual value.
Right, getting out of the way.
The developer's logs explicitly state that familiarity removes friction. The absolute best user interface is one that a user has already mastered somewhere else.
Yeah.
When a user opens an application for the very first time, they should never have to spend cognitive cycles asking, how do I navigate this menu?
They should instinctively know where everything is.
Exactly.
They could just reach into the dark and find the sink.
Precisely. Every ounce of cognitive energy a user spends trying to figure out your clever, novel navigation system is energy they are not spending interacting with your AI.
That makes a lot of sense. So by adopting the omnipresent WeChat layout, the developer eliminates the learning curve entirely.
Freeing up all that mental energy for the actual conversation.
So you've essentially tricked the user's eyes into thinking they are inside WeChat.
Right.
But visual layouts are only half the battle. Because as the developer points out, the illusion breaks the second the user actually tries to read the application.
The words on the screen matter just as much as the navigation bar.
And this introduces a remarkably strict mandate the developer implemented for version 0.0.4. The application had to be Chinese first, not Chinese translated.
Right.
Every single piece of user-facing text in MIO was written natively in Chinese from the very first line of code.
No English draft?
None. There were absolutely no English drafts that were later run through a localization file.
Yeah, because the developer argues aggressively that translated user interfaces always feel subtly, but undeniably, off.
Oh, absolutely. If you've ever used an application that was clearly designed for an English audience and then localized into another language, you experience that friction firsthand.
English words are generally shorter and more compact than many other languages. So when you translate an English interface into German, for example, the words spill out of the buttons.
Yeah, they break the whole design.
And when you translate it into Chinese, the typography often feels alien. The line spacing is optimized for Latin characters, not Chinese characters.
The phrasing feels clunky.
And the tone frequently ends up sounding bizarrely formal in contexts where it should be a casual, relaxed chat.
The developer actually highlights one specific string of text that perfectly illustrates this.
Oh, the typing indicator.
Yes. When an AI is processing a prompt and generating a response, the application displays the exact Chinese phrase that translates roughly to "the other party is typing."
Right.
But the developer notes this isn't just a literal translation of the English phrase typing.
No.
It is the exact character for character string that Chinese users have seen millions of times at the top of their actual WeChat conversations when a human friend is replying.
Which is a masterstroke of psychological manipulation through typography. When an application uses the exact phrasing your brain is already conditioned to expect, it completely bypasses your critical thinking faculties.
It speeds directly to your reflexes.
Exactly. A user doesn't actively read that phrase and consciously process the meaning of the words. Their brain simply registers a dopamine hit of anticipation.
A friend is writing back.
Right. It makes the application feel inherently native. It feels like it naturally belongs on your device rather than feeling like a piece of foreign software that was poorly imported.
Okay, so you get the layout right and you get the typography right.
Yeah.
But visual tricks and perfect phrasing fall apart the second the user actually touches the app.
Of course.
If the first physical interaction feels robotic, the whole illusion shatters. So how did the developer solve the interaction problem?
That brings us to the complete overhaul of the onboarding process.
Onboarding, which is notoriously treated as an afterthought in software development, right? Mm. Like a necessary evil just to collect user data.
But it is actually the critical moment where the relationship dynamic between the human and the software is permanently established.
In Mio's older Telegram version, the onboarding was standard mechanical bot behavior.
You clicked inline keyboards.
You tapped standard unformatted buttons. It felt exactly like filling out a digital form at the DMV.
Just tedious.
Yeah. But the new web application's onboarding is a radical departure. It is structured entirely as a chat-style Q&A.
Mio asks you a set of questions via chat bubbles.
And you answer by tapping highly styled response buttons. Even the complex process of selecting the AI's backstory and personality parameters is conducted within the natural flow of a message thread.
Right.
But here's where it gets really interesting. I looked at this fake chat onboarding in the logs, and my first thought was, this is incredibly inefficient.
How so?
As a user, a traditional drop-down menu takes me 2 seconds to use. A scripted step-by-step chat might take 30 seconds.
Right.
So why intentionally slow the user down? Isn't that adding friction?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we see it as a deliberate trade-off. They are sacrificing raw speed to establish psychological framing.
Framing the relationship.
Exactly. The developer emphasizes that onboarding sets the behavioral tone for the entire life cycle of the user.
Okay.
If your very first interaction with the system is mechanical, like selecting items from a drop-down menu, clicking generic radio buttons, toggling switches, your brain permanently categorizes that software as a mechanical tool.
And then you treat it like one.
Right. You will subsequently treat the AI mechanically, sending it rigid commands. However, if the very first interaction feels structurally identical to a conversation, you are psychologically primed to treat the AI like a collaborative partner from minute one.
Wow. You are covertly teaching the user how to behave inside the app without them even realizing they are being instructed.
Yes. By the time the onboarding sequence is finished, the user has already successfully completed their first chat with Mio.
Even though every single response they gave was pre-scripted by the developer.
Exactly. The illusion of fluid conversation has already been cemented in their mind.
But for that conversational illusion to hold up under the weight of actual daily use, the back end of the system needs to understand how humans text in the real world.
Because real humans do not talk like pre-scripted buttons.
Right. Which brings us to one of the most brilliant technical engineering solutions detailed in these logs client-side message batching.
Oh, this specific feature is a beautiful example of solving a messy, unpredictable human behavioral problem with a highly sophisticated technical mechanism.
Consider how you actually use your phone. How often do you sit down and draft a perfectly constructed, grammatically flawless paragraph, review it, and then hit send?
Basically never.
Almost never.
Yeah.
Human texting is rapid fire and fragmented. You type hey and hit send.
Yep.
A second later, you type how are you and hit send. Then I had a rough day and hit send.
We naturally break our complex thoughts into small, immediate bursts of text. It is just how human pacing works.
But in a naive software architecture, that human habit creates an absolute nightmare.
It does.
The system registers three separate keystrokes, followed by three distinct enter commands. That triggers three completely separate API calls to the AI language model.
And then the AI attempts to generate three separate disjointed responses simultaneously.
Right. It tries to reply to hey, while also trying to reply to how are you.
The AI gets confused, the context is lost, the conversation breaks down.
And the illusion of a conversational partner is instantly destroyed.
So to prevent that collapse, the developer engineered a client-side batching system directly into the web application. The interface actually monitors your microscopic typing patterns in real time.
And the mechanism they built for this is incredibly clever. The developer wrote a custom use polling hook in React.
Right.
Think of this hook like an attentive bartender watching a customer holding a glass.
Okay, I like this analogy.
As long as the customer is still taking sips, the bartender waits patiently. It's only when the customer sets the empty glass down on the bar and takes their hand away for a full 2 seconds that the bartender swoops in to clear it. The application is doing the exact same thing with your keystrokes. If you type a message, hit send, and then start typing again within a very short predefined window, the app holds that first message in a queue.
It waits.
It watches your typing indicator to see if you are still forming your thought. When you finally pause long enough, it batches all those rapid-fire fragments into one coherent, unified payload and sends it to the AI.
It literally forces the machine to adapt to human pacing.
Exactly. It's like holding an elevator door for someone running behind rather than sending three separate elevators up the shaft.
That's a great way to put it. It programmatically understands that hey and how are you sent 2 seconds apart constitute one continuous thought, not two separate inquiries requiring two separate responses.
And the underlying code behind it is stunningly elegant. That use polling hook is only 30 lines of code.
Really? Just 30?
Yeah. It even utilizes the browser's visibility API, meaning it is smart enough to know when your browser tab is hidden in the background, and it automatically pauses the polling intervals to save your phone's battery and memory.
That elegance really extends to the broader state management architecture they implemented, too.
Oh, definitely.
They utilize dynamic routes, so each individual conversation has its own dedicated, isolated memory space.
Right.
Furthermore, they constructed a custom use agent's hook written in under 100 lines of code that serves as the single source of truth for the entire application's data.
And that use agent's hook solves a massive headache in app development. Stale data.
Oh, the worst.
Because it acts as the single source of truth across all four tabs. If you are actively chatting with an AI agent and then navigate back to your main contacts list, the preview snippet of your conversation updates instantaneously.
There is no lag. No manual refreshing required.
But reading through the sheer scope of this engineering effort, handling complex state management, dynamic routing, debouncing user inputs, building a multi-page layout from scratch, you would assume the developer relied heavily on massive prepackaged UI libraries to cut corners and save time.
Oh, absolutely. Relying on heavy UI component libraries like Material UI, Ant Design, or Tailwind component kits is the standard industry practice.
Yeah, everyone uses them.
Developers use them because they provide pre-built buttons, navbars, and modals out of the box. I mean, it saves weeks of development time.
Which makes the developer's proudest achievement in version 0.0.4 absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
They committed to a doctrine of radical technical independence. They engineered over 30 distinct UI components for this redesign.
The intricate tab bars, the dynamic chat page,
the chat style onboarding flow, the data middleware, and they did all of this without adding a single new package to their package.json file.
Zero dependencies.
Zero. No Ant Design, no external kits, nothing.
To anyone outside of software engineering, that might sound like a minor detail, but it is actually a massive, risk-heavy engineering flex.
Seriously.
While component libraries are incredibly convenient, they carry a heavy cost. Bloat and opinionated design.
Right. They force you into their style.
They inject thousands of lines of unnecessary code into your application, and they aggressively impose their own visual language onto your project.
The developer noted that fighting against an external library to force it to look exactly like WeChat, you know, overriding its built-in styles with endless custom CSS tags, that would actually take significantly more time and create more technical debt than simply building the components from scratch.
Exactly. If your goal is to build an interface that is highly specific, if you need it to feel exactly like a native app and not just like a generic web page, you must retain absolute control over every single pixel rendered.
So to achieve this without libraries, the developer built a completely custom design system utilizing native CSS custom properties.
Right.
They defined a strict set of variables at the root level of the application, calling them WeChat 2025 design tokens.
I love that name.
Yeah, and these tokens centrally control every color hex code, border radius, curvature, and padding dimension across the entire app.
They even built centralized reusable utility functions, like a shared avatar renderer.
What does that matter?
Well, this ensured that an AI agent's profile picture is generated by the exact same piece of code, whether it is being displayed in the Discover Marketplace or inside an active chat window.
Oh, consistency.
Right. Because as the developer noted, even a one-pixel inconsistency in how an image is cropped makes an application feel cheap and unfinished.
And beyond ensuring visual perfection, avoiding third-party dependencies is fundamentally about retaining total sovereignty over your software's security and lifespan.
Yes.
Every time a developer imports an external package, they are chaining their project to architectural decisions made by a stranger.
Decisions they now have to maintain, debug, and monitor for vulnerabilities.
Right. By keeping their dependency count at zero, this developer guaranteed they deeply understood the mechanics of every single line of code executing in their application.
And they were relentless about ensuring those lines of code executed safely.
Yeah, the audits. Before they even considered shipping this update, they subjected the application to two full rigorous audit rounds.
They actively hunted for and patched cross-site scripting or XSS vulnerabilities.
Which is huge. If an application isn't audited for XSS, a malicious user could theoretically send a chat message containing a hidden JavaScript payload.
And the app would blindly execute that code, potentially compromising user data.
Right. They also audited for CSS variable inconsistencies, accessibility standard violations, and stripped out any duplicated logic.
That rigorous auditing process speaks to an incredibly mature engineering philosophy.
The developer explicitly wrote in their logs, "A feature without an audit is a liability. Ship when the audit is clean, not when the feature is done."
I mean, that should be on a poster in every engineering department.
Honestly, yeah. They even applied that uncompromising philosophy to the fundamental structure of the internet, URLs.
Oh, the redirects.
Yeah, they configured middleware routing so that if a legacy user tried to visit the old deprecated chat web address, the server would safely and silently redirect them to the newly structured chats page without throwing a 404 error.
Why go through that effort? Right.
Because, in the developer's own words, URLs are promises. Breaking a link breaks user trust.
It ultimately all circles back to the core themes of trust, psychological comfort, and seamless immersion.
Everything. Every architectural choice, every CSS custom property, and every custom React hook was explicitly engineered to make the user feel entirely secure and intimately at home in the digital space.
Yeah.
So what does this all mean?
Well, if we step back and evaluate the massive journey from the first part of these developer logs to where we are today.
Mio started as nothing more than a theoretical architectural concept.
Right.
Then it evolved into a functioning Telegram bot, living as a temporary tenant on someone else's platform, heavily constrained by someone else's rules and visual language.
And now, with the release of version 0.0.4, it has blossomed into a fully sovereign native-feeling web platform.
The developer now owns the onboarding, the navigation structure, the typography, the pacing, the complete end-to-end user experience. Mm.
They have meticulously crafted a digital environment that aligns so perfectly with the deeply ingrained habits of their specific audience that the user interface effectively ceases to exist.
It just becomes invisible.
Invisible.
And according to the final notes in the log, they are not stopping here.
No, the logs end with a massive teaser for the future.
Now that this flawless foundation is built, the next major frontier for version 0.0.5 is making Mio speak.
They are preparing to move the platform from text-based interaction to real-time voice.
Which is wild.
Transitioning to voice is going to require an exponentially deeper understanding of human behavioral nuances. But analyzing everything this developer accomplished in version 0.0.4 raises a profound philosophical question regarding the future of user interface design.
Yeah, something for you to mull over after we wrap up today.
Right. This developer went to extraordinary, painstaking length to hijack human muscle memory.
They explicitly engineered mechanisms to mimic the fragmented pacing of human typing, just to make you comfortable.
They intentionally faked a conversational flow during onboarding to prime your psychological state and dictate how you treat the machine.
It makes you wonder, as our software interfaces become perfectly seamlessly designed to mimic our native human habitats, where exactly is the line between brilliant, frictionless user experience and an AI interface that is subtly, invisibly manipulating our emotions?
It's a fine line.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us for your deep dive into the architecture of familiarity and the developer logs of Mio version 0.0.4. As always, keep questioning the digital world around you and stay curious.